Welcome to the Public Storyteller. My name is Michael Stock with Dr. Karen Neal. Karen teaches at Florida Atlantic University and is a professional storyteller. Hi, Karen.
Hey, Micah.
What story do you have today?
Here's one from Pedro Zepeda.
This happened probably about maybe 10 or 12 years ago. And so I was out here on the Big Cypress Reservation for a living history event that we do out here. It's called the, now it's called the Big Cypress Shootout. And, of course, it takes place on the Big Cypress Seminole Indian Reservation. Work part-time at the museum, but I also like helping out with this living history event because I've always had an interest in our history and, you know, helping teach the history of my tribe to the general public. And I still enjoy doing that. I still travel around and teach Seminole history at different events around the state and around the Southeast. So the living history event that we did, the Big Cypress Shootout, reenacted kind of a typical skirmish between the Seminoles and the U.S. soldiers during the 1830s time period. It's what history books today call a Second Seminole War. But, of course, the Seminoles, we all considered it one long war because we didn't get to leave after our tour of duty, and teaches people about that part of history of Florida that a lot of people don't know about. That's something that's really important, not just to Florida history, but to U.S. history as well, because a lot of these captains and colonels and generals that were fighting the Seminoles here later on went to go fight in the Civil War and got their feet wet fighting the Seminoles here in Florida. Even Zachary Taylor, later on became president, fought the Seminoles here in Florida. In actual history, more often than not, there are a lot more U.S. soldier casualties than Seminole casualties. And a lot of that just had to do with the fighting tactics that the U.S. was using. They'd stand in block formation while we hid behind trees and such in the woods. And so during these interactions, the U.S. soldiers always took much more heavy casualties than the Seminoles. So in the Seminole Wars reenactments that take place through living history events, I'm always portray a Seminole because that's my background, my history, and consequently now my area of expertise. So for the participants of that living history event, me and my brother, we would take them out on a swamp buggy ride at night. A swamp buggy is a large specialized off-road vehicle for traversing the swamp, so it has these large tractor tires, and most of the body is taken off of the frame. So they'll use like old Jeep or Ford or Chevy truck frames, and they'll just take all the body panels off, make it something that's really good for going through the swamps and the mud and the water. Normally they have some sort of short ladder welded onto them so you can climb in and out of them, or sometimes you just climb up the tires. And so we took them out this particular evening, and of course it was after dark, and it was in February, and actually it was a little bit chilly at that time. And so everyone was all bundled up. Most of us were actually still wearing all of our living history clothing, too, as well that night. And so we go out in these swamp buggies out into the swamp. And so I'm following along behind my brother in another swamp buggy because we needed two of them to take all the people out. And the one he was driving was huge. It had these massive tires. They're probably taller than me. Articulated in the middle too, kind of like a front end loader. So I'm following along behind him as we're taking him around, and he drives out into this marsh, and so I follow behind him, and as he's pulling out into the marsh, he turns around, and I can see that he's yelling something to me, but I can't hear over the swamp buggies and the engines and all that, and then all of a sudden the swamp buggy just stops dead in its tracks. And then he drives around and he goes, "I was telling you, don't follow me." So it was a little bit too little too late. Yeah, I started trying to put the buggy in reverse and forward, trying to rock the buggy out, and that wasn't working. Tried several times hooking up the brother's buggy and pulling it, and it just wasn't going anywhere. Since it wasn't moving, we decided to go ahead and unload everybody that was on my buggy. So I had to climb out of the swamp buggy into the muddy marsh. And so everybody got off the buggy, and my brother hooked up one more time, and then I just hit the gas as hard as I could. And so as soon as I hit the gas, I just hear this weird noise, this plop, 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 plop. I didn't know what it was. I still didn't go anywhere. And I'm sitting kind of looking around trying to figure out what that noise was. And several seconds later, all this mud comes falling down on me. And second time around, still going plop, 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 as all the mud landed. And so what happened is, as I hit the gas, I just spun the tires in the mud, and I flung the mud. Everyone that got out of the buggy said it probably went up about maybe 30 feet into the air. And so that's what that noise was that I initially heard, was the mud flinging off the tires, and then I heard it again as it landed on top of me. Anyhow, we one more time gave it a shot, and we were able to finally pull the buggy out, and he pulled me out of the marsh, and then we loaded everybody back up on the buggy, and it was probably about a good 45 minutes of us going back and forth and trying different ways of hooking up the swamp buggies, and everyone that was there seemed to actually enjoy the side adventure. I think it's part of the fun of going out in a swamp buggy is just the different adventures you might have while you go out in them.
Pedro Zepeda with an experience while teaching history.
While living history, you might say,
yes, you know,
a lot of muck and marsh.
Well, it sounds like fun.
And I love the image of the, you know, I talk about images because stories are movies running through our heads. And I love the image of the clods of mud flying up 30 feet in the air and coming down like it's raining mud. And the people dressed in period costume in the dune buggy laughing and getting into the whole thing.
Well, I didn't even know there was a living history in the Everglades to watch this big cypress shootout is what they call now. But from what I understand, what, did the Seminoles lose that war?
Very interesting question, Michael, because the Seminoles were the only natives who never surrendered to the U.S. Army. And one of the wonderful things about this story, a little bit of an irony, if you know that about the Seminoles, is that here there were people, and they were, I think only Pedro and his brother, I think, were Seminole in this group, I believe. And here were all these people dressed up as Seminoles, and the marsh, the muck, the very thing that was their strength when the U.S. soldiers tried to capture their ancestors, got to them and brought them down. And it's almost like all this time later, almost 200 years later, they're surrendering to the muck. But thankfully, they're not surrendering to the U.S. Army.
Well, it still sounds like fun getting stuck in the mud and the muck. And you figure these guys live there, they would know where not to drive to get stuck.
And that's part of the fun of the story. Yes, it's, you know, one of these nature conquers man stories to some extent. You know, there are different kinds of dramatic conflicts and stories. There's man versus man, and there's man versus God, and then there's man versus nature.
Muck.
Man versus muck. I love it. Yes, that's a subset of man versus nature. And we include animals in man versus nature. So the classic short story of Jack London, To Build a Fire, for example, that's a man versus nature story. And this, in a really interesting way, is a man or human in 2019 versus nature story. And unlike in the early part of the 19th century with their ancestors, they were lucky enough to have dune buggies. But on the other hand, they were unlucky enough. If they'd been on their feet and they had been walking through this stuff every day, chances are this wouldn't have happened. So it's six of one and half a dozen of the other. Have you ever been on a swamp buggy?
I've been on a airboat, not a swamp buggy.
I guess it's a really different experience, but they're both really loud. And the sound, the volume that was keeping him from hearing what his brother was saying is a sense detail in the story. You know, so often people say what things look like, what people were wearing, what the sky was like, but we don't often hear other senses. And in this case, the sound really played a part in the story.
Well, with the sound and the muck turning up, I know airboats are destroy parts of the Everglades. Those swamp buggies must really destroy the Everglades. It's probably just certain areas that use that equipment.
These people, connected as they are with the culture, with the museum, with the reservation, I have a feeling that Pedro and his brother probably are great stewards of the environment. I'm not going to be concerned about how much muck they are tossing around.
Okay. Well, thanks for bringing that story in, Karen. If our listeners have a story they would like to share, how can they get in touch with you?
Send me an email about any story-related questions or comments to C. Neil, that's C, N as in Nancy, E-I-L-E at F as in Frank, A-U, .edu.
Our website also has contact information, as well as archive stories at WLRN.org, click radio, and the Public Storyteller. Thanks, Karen.
Thank you, Michael. See you next week.
Dr. Karen Neal teaches at Florida Atlantic University and is a professional storyteller. My name is Michael Stock. The Public Storyteller returns next Sunday.